You're live, Mayor. Thank you.
That's my knuckle tonight. I'd like to call to order this City Council special meeting of March 31st, 2020. Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Black?
Here.
Councilmember Curtis?
Here.
Councilmember Falcone?
Here.
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Sweet?
Here. Okay, as council members are participating remotely this afternoon, all of our votes will be by roll call. Next item of business is item number 3, resolution R5414, ratifying city manager emergency directive related to a moratorium on small business tenant evictions and the COVID-19 virus. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So before we get into this particular item and the one that follow, I do want to say just how grateful I am for all the work that our city attorney, Kevin Raymond, has done in the last 4 days. Each of these action items before you is extremely complicated, is a little bit gray area. We have really focused on first, is it necessary? And then is it for COVID relief? And then is it defensible? So Kevin has not only had to draft these ordinances, he's also had to do the research behind them to make sure that they meet those tests as being necessary and defensible. And then he also did the staff reports for us. So, and I gave him about 4 days to do it. So I just want to acknowledge the extraordinary work that he's done to get us to this point. And I'm very grateful for all of it. And then we're lucky to have him as our city attorney. So what I want to do, starting off with this one, is you all got these sent to you by email, in addition to what was posted on the website. We do have slight red line versions that we want to have the city attorney walk you through. So each of these has, with the exception of the human services funding one, has a small red line change. The reason we made the changes was basically because of feedback we got from individual council members, and we thought they were all good comments. So thank you all for reading through these and giving us your suggestions. So what I thought I would do is do a quick introduction of the first one and then have Kevin walk you through the red line changes, and then we'll both be available for any questions. We don't have formal presentations, slideshow presentations for any of these given the quick turnaround in the special meeting. So the first item, Resolution 5414, ratifies a directive that I signed earlier today that does declare a moratorium on small business tenant evictions for the COVID virus, and there's a small change as a result of feedback from Councilmember Nixon, and I'm going to have the city attorney walk you through that.
Okay. Well, good evening, Council. City manager signed the emergency directive this afternoon. It includes just a couple of changes from the draft emergency directive that was included in your materials. The first is that it expires the earlier of the termination of the declaration of the proclamation of emergency that the city manager executed on February 29th, or 60 days after today's directive, whichever happens sooner. And we also added language that if the termination date is extended for some reason, it would require ratification by the city council. The second change is in Section 1B related to the state law definition of small business. Councilmember Nixon had some very good questions about what that definition included. And in particular, I think the thought was that we wanted to make sure that for national or international franchises that were wholly owned and operated locally in Kirkland, that those would be included within the city manager's definition of small business. And so we have made that change as well. The last change is in Section 1E. We added or lease expiration to make it clear that the moratorium applies not only to the non-payment of rent, but also to the expiration of leases. That was referenced earlier in the directive, but not here, so we made that change as well. And then in terms of the resolution itself, Councilmember Curtis pointed out to me this afternoon that the termination language in the first draft of Resolution R5414 and the city manager's directive were different. Our preference is for the language that was in the city manager's directive, so we amended the resolution to track that language in the directive. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Council? Councilmember Nixon?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Kevin, there were a couple of other questions that I had sent that I just wanted to ask them publicly to make sure that we have a common understanding of what the language means. I appreciate that you made the edit that just because a business is a franchise of a national or international company, that it's still eligible. The second question was, if a franchisee owns multiple stores, like say it's a submarine sandwich shop and they own two or three stores in Kirkland, does the 50 employee limit apply to each store individually or across all of the stores that person owns in Kirkland?
So I think when we talked about this earlier, we were saying we treat each individual franchise as an individual franchise, regardless of who owned each franchise.
And so your question is, if there are several franchises owned in Kirkland by the same individuals and operated by those same individuals, are the employees at each of those franchises within Kirkland aggregated for purposes of the...
Of determining 50, the 50 person.
50 or fewer.
50 employees, yeah.
I would, I think that they would be treated separately. Yeah, I mean, that would be my view. I think then that would be consistent with what I would expect would be your policy intent, which is to say that you don't want a location to lose its right to operate during the pendency of the moratorium for failure to pay rent or expiration of a lease, and the leases obviously could be different from location to location. So I would treat those as separate. The state law definition doesn't answer that question. The city manager's intent, I hope I've explained it correctly from his perspective.
So each location is considered separately?
Separate. Yes.
And then I'm going to skip a couple, but the main one I wanted to get clarified is, what's the definition of employee? Is it 50 individuals, or is it 50 FTEs, the way that FTE is defined in our head tax? So, I mean, is the limit 50 times 1,920 hours or per year, or is it 50 people?
Well, I'm going to ask the city manager what his intent there is. My guess, because the state law definition of small business that's included in the directive doesn't answer that question. My guess is that it's going to apply to how many employees a business has, whether they're working full time or not. But I'll defer to the city manager on that.
Yeah, that was our intent. We also anticipated that this could be further refined. In the same way the governor's been further refining. So if someone came forward and said, hey, these two definitions don't align or something like that, or there was a need for clarification, we could further do it. But I think our intent is the people, not the hours.
And that may be especially important with small businesses and nonprofits, where there may be a number of individuals who are employed but don't work 40-hour weeks.
Yeah.
And the idea would be to protect those businesses during the pendency of the COVID emergency.
Okay. Although I think that at least my feeling is that, let's say you had a business that had 100 people who worked for them, but they all worked half time.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Right. Would they be covered or would they not? It sounds like, since we're saying it's people and not hours, that it would be 50. Actually, less than 50 unique individuals who are employed that are eligible, and not, 50 FTEs. And so, I think that's going to be, I don't know how many businesses we have in town that are right on that threshold, but it will be important for somebody for us to be consistent in how that's applied.
So I can definitely ask the finance department to run those scenarios. Trying to be straightforward the first time around. If a further clarification became necessary, we could issue that pretty quickly, and then that could be ratified by the council if somebody fell into that category. Looking at some of the places like car dealerships that have several hundred people, but they might all be part-time, you can start to get into a really challenging. We're trying not to make it too complicated for us to understand either. So, you know,
right.
But yes, we don't want to leave someone out, but I think we could further clarify it if we needed to.
So I'll just conclude by saying, I kind of like it based on what the businesses report to the city already, which is FTEs. So, but if we want it to be unique individuals, then I'm okay with that too. I just don't want it to be ambiguous.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Pascal.
Thank you. Thanks, Kevin and Kirk, for preparing this legislation. As a small business owner, you know, that has a lease that we have to pay every month, you know, this is something that obviously we think about. The question that I have is, so under this proposed legislation, can a business then face eviction after the emergency order has been disbanded for leases that haven't been paid? Or could you maybe just give a little bit of explanation of how this would play out after the emergency order was done?
Yeah, I think the intent and the language of the directive is that no one can lose their lease based on non-payment of rent or the expiration of a lease during the pendency of the moratorium, and during that period, late fees and penalties and other things like that can't lawfully accrue. However, once the directive goes away and the emergency is over, there would not be a legal basis under this document that would prevent a landlord from going to court and seeking to evict a tenant for non-payment of rent, for example.
Okay.
But let me add, because it's important, that one of the provisions in the directive is a requirement that landlords exercise their best efforts to work out rent payment schedules with tenants, so that would happen after the directive was rescinded and the emergency was over. There would be a required effort on the part of the landlord and the tenant to work out how the tenant is going to catch up on rent that had been not paid during the pendency of the moratorium.
Thank you. That's helpful. I appreciate that clarification.
Any further discussion? Councilmember Curtis?
Hi there. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for putting this together so quickly. I just really want to make sure that we make it clear to everyone that we're in a crisis, and this is a response to this crisis. But this isn't going to be our only tool in the toolbox, that we are going to continue to look for ways to support all of our small businesses and our property owners. And ultimately, we hope that tenants and property owners can work together and come up with a payment schedule so this all works. City manager, can you talk at all about some of our next steps and what we'll be working on from here?
Absolutely. Thank you. So all of you received an updated, we're calling it a script, but there's a document that was just emailed to you by David Wolbrecht, who's been working with Assistant City Manager Jim Lopez on the business response. And that is going to be part of background documents for all of you that you're going to get hand-delivered tomorrow as well as emailed tomorrow. And it lays out both names for you to call to talk to tenants and businesses and also a detailed background of the kinds of things and resources that we're making available. But just very quickly, as you know, we sent out the emails and texts to businesses to connect them with our Small Business Relief Fund. We talked about that a little bit already. We'll also be asking you to help us raise more money for that fund. That goes into effect April 1st. People can request grants from the Small Business Relief Fund starting tomorrow. That will be done through the Chamber of Commerce, and the Chamber will be also making the decisions about how to allocate the money. What we're also doing is basically allocating our economic development team and even possibly adding some additional staff that are going to ask as sort of ombuds people or concierge services for both landlords and tenants to take them through the small business loan program. So all of the things that have been happening now with the CARES Act, the stimulus package, and see even some of the things that happened before that, and also the state actions that are being taken. What we're going to be doing is really just helping anyone who needs it to fill out those applications, go through the process, get the loans, which then can be forgiven if they do things like maintain employees and so forth. So when this all hits tomorrow, when you get it, one of the things that we're highlighting is the Assistant City Manager, Dimlos Lopez, is actually going to have, he's going to be the chief point of contact. So if there's any business, small business, or landlord who has a concern or a question or needs help, they call Jim to start, and Jim will then triage that call and then allocate them to a staff person who will walk them through how to get access to all of the support that's coming through the federal and state governments. So we'll start, we obviously have Duncan Malloy on contract and Ellen Miller Wolf, but we're also looking at adding additional staff as well to make that possible. So there's many, many things in the hopper. Make sure that I don't miss any of them, but those are sort of the highlights. And then there's a frequently asked questions section, and then there will be also, as you know, a big website that has access to all of the business resources of the state and federal government. So many, many things that we're trying to do, and I'm happy to answer any questions on any of that.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure people realize we're not stopping here, that the support will continue.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Falcone.
I think Councilmember Black may have been before me in the queue.
Oh, sorry, Neil, I didn't see you. No. Councilmember Black.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, like Councilmember Curtis, I just want to make sure that all aspects of our business owners in Kirkland understand that we're looking out for everyone. And really, I'm going to support this this action, and in part because I'm looking for an equitable allocation of the risk among all of our business owners. And I'm really hoping this is just one leg of a three-legged stool. So the moratorium is one leg of that stool, but also hopefully the rental assistance also comes in so that we also see landlords getting paid ultimately. So whether that's through insurance, SBA loans, SBA grants, SBA loan forgiveness, or any of the other relief programs that are being adopted at the federal, the state, and local level to help small businesses, including through the CARE Act. The reason I'm going to support this is I'm really looking for that second leg of the stool to also come into play and help allocate risk equally between our small businesses and our property owners. And I do think the third leg of that stool is landlords and tenants working together on rent payment plans so that we don't see a rash of evictions as soon as the emergency ends and the moratorium lifts. But landlords and tenants are also using this period of time to put together some kind of equally agreeable payment program so that landlords are ultimately getting paid. But during this crisis, which I think Councilmember Curtis characterized it correctly, during this crisis, we're giving a little bit of breathing room, especially for our brick and mortar small businesses that have, you know, that are open to the general public who right now have no business. So I just wanted to go on record explaining sort of where I'm coming from in supporting this action. And I will be supporting.
Thank you, Councilmember Falcone.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to, you know, echo my fellow council members' comments. Thank you, Kevin and Kurt and Jim. and Dave, and just really the whole team who's been working really hard on all these efforts to support our small businesses and our community. It really goes to show, you know, the public that it's not just this meeting that we're having here, but it's been, you know, a month of really hard work behind the scenes to for a lot of different efforts on a lot of different fronts that some of my fellow council members have mentioned. And so it really shows that our city values the small businesses in our community, but also that we understand and acknowledge the limitations of what we can do and that we're leveraging partnerships with other organizations. I think that's really important to highlight now too, you know, our collaboration with the chamber, you know, the technical assistance that we're providing for other funding like the SBA, you know, we're collaborating with the Corcoran Parks and Community Foundation. I think that this is one small piece and the work that we're doing as a city is one small piece, and that there are many different players that are working to support our small businesses, you know, from the federal government down. And so I'm proud of the work that Kirkland is doing and that we're not just relying on other organizations to do this work, but that we're playing a really important role in doing that. So I definitely support this initiative here. Thank you.
Thank you. City Manager?
Yeah, I just wanted to, using the legs of the stool analogy, just to point out for folks watching from home that one of the actions you're going to be taking later, we're not just looking for business to step up in this. One of the actions you're going to be considering later is that the city is actually deferring payment of utility rates and also waiving late fees and so forth. And we've also eliminated shutoffs and things. So we're also making sure that if there's a city cost to a business or to a residence, we're deferring those as well. So we're not just looking to the private sector to do this. And it's also probably important to remind everybody that previously this governor had put in a moratorium on residential evictions. So again, this is not just looking at one sector of the society right now. It's looking across the different sectors.
Thank you. And just my only comment would be, I agree with everything that has been said. I think this is a demonstration of the fact that we are trying as hard as we can to be responsive to our entire community. And as one of those businesses, it's interesting to me that there are three of us who are actually have businesses in Kirkland. So it's very real. And I think it's a demonstration that we're attempting to make sure that we're taking care of all of Kirkland. So with that, is there any further discussion? Can I get a motion to approve resolution R5414 ratifying city manager emergency directive related to the moratorium on small business tenant evictions and the COVID-19 virus? Councilmember Curtis.
I move to approve resolution R5414.
Seconded.
Moved by Councilmember Curtis, seconded by Councilmember Pascal, just because that's how I saw it. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Sorry, Madam Mayor,
we have to do a roll call.
Oops, we are doing a roll call. You know I always screw that. Kathy, please.
Councilmember Nixon.
Oops, you're muted.
You're on mute.
Yes, now I'm unmuted. Yes.
Councilmember Black.
Aye.
Councilmember Curtis.
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone.
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal.
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Yes.
Mayor Sweet.
Yes. Resolution 5414 is approved. Okay, the next item is substitute ordinance 04721 relating to emergency management and knowing violation of the lawful order of a public officer during an emergency or disaster and declaring an emergency. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So I'm going to let the city attorney explain why this clarification in our code is necessary in order to help enforce actions if we need to under this emergency and also future emergencies. One of the questions I got from some council members was, does this only apply to this current COVID pandemic? And our intent with this ordinance is actually to create this category for all future emergencies as well. So I want to make sure that that's clear to folks. I also, before I turn it over to the city attorney to walk you through the red line and provide some background, want to emphasize to the council and the public that our law enforcement officers, we don't have any intent to have them go out and start enforcing actions of the state and the and public health. Our intent will always be education first, and we'd only use a citation as a very last resort. So while this might give us the tools to do it, it's not our intent to start changing the way Kirkland police officers are working with the community at this time. So City Attorney, if you could walk them through.
Yeah, thank you. It's a somewhat complicated issue, and I want to just start by adding a few comments to the comments that the city manager just offered. Had a long conversation with the police chief this afternoon. I know the city manager has too, and she echoed to me what the city manager just said would be the department's intent, to sort of educate first, and the exercise of authority like this to issue a misdemeanor citation to an individual who has knowingly violated a lawful order in direct response to a declared emergency would be a last resort. As you all know, there's new things coming out of the state every day, and one of the things that came out very recently is from the governor is a process for individuals who are not following emergency directives to be encouraged to comply, for complaints to be submitted to the state, and in appropriate cases, for cases to be referred to the state attorney general. That's a process that in general would be followed, but there are likely circumstances where if things got bad and there were problems, the state would ask us to exercise our authority to help reinforce health directives associated with the emergency. And so the question then becomes on what authority, I mean, from my perspective, the question becomes on what authority would we be acting? As you know, we have adopted many state misdemeanor criminal statutes by reference in our code, but we have not adopted or attempted to adopt various state laws that make certain actions during the pendency of an emergency unlawful. And so, and those statutes don't anticipate every possible circumstance that could occur in the event of an emergency. So, for example, there are state laws that we could expressly reference by incorporation that deal with destruction of property, disorderly conduct, failing to disperse, violating state directives related to isolation and quarantine, but they don't deal with other things that have surfaced as important during this pandemic, such as shelter in place, as an example. So with that sort of philosophical orientation and the framework that the state has outlined for how complaints about failure to comply with directives associated with the emergency can be forwarded to the state, the thought is that for this emergency and for future emergencies, we ought to have an independent legal basis in our code to assert the authority to enforce a lawful order of a public officer in connection with an emergency. Councilmember Falcone, did you have a question?
Oh, I think at the end, Councilor Curtis and I just have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm very happy to speak to that more. But in closing, I'll just mention the one change that we're suggesting that you consider making as part of a substitute ordinance 04721. And that was in response to concerns that some of you expressed to us and that the city manager also had, which is how do we ensure that this tool is going to be rarely exercised, and when it is exercised, it's narrowly focused on an urgent public health, safety, and welfare need associated with a declared emergency. And so we have language in there that we think already helps with that, such as it has to be a lawful order, can't be an unlawful order. So it can't be an unconstitutional order. It has to be a knowing violation. So in order for an individual to be charged with a misdemeanor under this code provision, it would not only have to be a lawful order, but it would have to have been knowingly violated. And then in response to comments that some of you made, we added language that said that it needs to be in direct response to a declared or proclaimed emergency at a, you know, relevant level of government, federal, state, county, or local. So that's the one change that we've suggested be made to a substitute ordinance. That's sort of a quick overview of the framework for why we think this could be a rarely used but helpful tool, and happy to answer questions.
Councilmember Curtis.
Sorry, you're muted.
Thank you, Kevin. I hate to start this way right out of the gate, but you and I spoke earlier today and I told you that I had concerns about this being too broad. And I still feel that way. It feels too broad. It covers too many possible emergencies. And I'm just telling my fellow council members, I would be more comfortable with, I understand why we're doing it. And I think the governor is going to give us direction to do this. So we need to have this in place so that we can follow through on these violations. But I'm not comfortable with this initiative the way it stands, covering any sort of emergency, because that's not clearly defined. So I'm just telling my fellow council members, if we tailor this specifically to COVID-19, I would be comfortable with it. But the way it's written now, I'm not.
Fair enough. I mean, just a quick response to that. Thought a lot long and hard about your comments this afternoon, Councilmember Curtis, and really appreciated them. There are some cities that have a provision like this in their emergency preparedness codes, and there are some cities that don't and wish they did now for this emergency. And the thought is that we don't know what the next emergency or disaster is going to be, but that when it happens, this is a tool that we would like to have in place as opposed to having to put it in place. We thought really hard about how to address your concern, which I understood to be how do we know that it's not only a knowing violation but a lawful order, and that it's really, really focused on an urgent public need associated with a declared emergency or proclamation. We talked about ratification and recognize that that wouldn't happen at the federal level. I mean, Congress wouldn't ratify an act of the president. The legislature wouldn't come reconvene to ratify an action of the governor. But those orders can happen. And when they do, it would be helpful. And we're asked to help. It would be helpful to have a tool in place. So this could be narrowed just to COVID. It could be you could go forward with it as a code amendment, just expecting that it will be used appropriately in future situations. But that was our thinking.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Falcone.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I have a question similar to Councilmember Curtis's, but I also have a couple of other just low-hanging fruit questions that I wanted to ask first. Can you clarify how this would apply to minors? Because a lot of the complaints that we've been receiving are teenagers that are violating the stay-home order and the not congregating order, and also how it would apply to businesses that are and employees of businesses who are coming to work that are not deemed essential but are still open for business. Would that apply to their employees? Would it apply only to their owners of the business, or would it not apply at all to those situations? Thank you.
Yeah, well, it would, you know, it would apply as drafted. It would apply to any individual who knowingly violates, you know, a lawful directive during a declared emergency. So it would apply to individuals. It could apply to a business owner. It could apply to an employee. It could apply to individuals violating a shelter-in-place order at a park if all other efforts to enforce those orders fell short.
Okay, so it could be enforced on minors, and it could be enforced on employees whose bosses are telling them they have to come into work or they'll lose their jobs. If they do come into work, if they're not an essential business. Is that correct?
It would have to be a knowing violation of a lawful order, but yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so then my larger question is, could we revise this to just be for this current emergency now? I personally would like to give more thought to the larger, broader, applying this to any type of emergency. And I think that it would, it's such a important change that I would like to be more thoughtful personally and really consider that before voting on that. So I would like to make a motion to amend it to only be for the current disaster that we vote on this evening.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you.
Was that John?
Yeah.
Okay, it has been moved by Councilmember Falcone, seconded by Councilmember Pascal to amend the substitute ordinance 04721 to apply to COVID-19 only.
Madam Mayor.
Further discussion?
For discussion, I guess, just as a process question and code question, as drafted, it's an actual piece of code. And so maybe the city attorney can, I'm not sure we can do that, but maybe you should speak to that.
Yeah.
It should be codifying one event in the code versus an authority in emergency. So I just I want to make sure we talk through how that might actually happen.
Yeah, my suggestion would be that we treat this the way we're proposing that you consider treating the deferral of taxes and utility charges, which is not as an amendment to the code, but a change in how we approach cases under the code during the pendency of the emergency. And so what if you want to have this limited to COVID, we would, I think, do would be to recast it for COVID and indicate that it's not going to involve a recodification, but it would just be a change in our treatment of this issue during the pendency of the emergency.
Which would imply you'd want to table this and then bring something back, like on the April 7th council meeting, I think, rather than try to amend this, if I thinking through how we did the other one. Would that be correct, City Attorney?
Yeah.
Do we need this, like, do we anticipate that we'll need to use this in the next week? I want to make sure we understand the time sensitivity.
Right.
Of it.
So this, don't know. So the governor, as you know, had a press conference. I know he's doing the best he can as well, but we found it to be not very helpful because what he basically said is, hey, local jurisdictions should enforce this, but he did not in his proclamations provide any additional authority for local jurisdictions to enforce. So one of the challenges we grappled with, Kevin, city attorney and the police chief and I, is that there's a sizable group in the community that already thinks we have this authority and wants to know why we're not exercising it. And then there's a sizable group who don't want us to exercise it, right? And so what we were concerned about is now that the governor said that in particular, and if something does need to be dealt with, we don't have the clear authority to do it, we don't believe. So will that happen in the next 7 days? Probably not. I think we probably have time to wait till April 7th, but it could. And we just didn't want to be able to say, sorry, we can't go into that event and break it up because we don't have the authority to do so. Practically on the ground, we would go in and educate folks and we would basically ask them to disperse. So I think maybe the practical impact is probably going to be the same, whether we cite somebody or not. In talking with the chief, for example, when we do minor in possession, we rarely do that. We more or less go to the park and say, hey, you all need to get out of here. So, we have a very thoughtful police department that uses discretion. So I would suggest we would probably have time to wait till April 7th, but I can't guarantee something won't happen between now and April 7th.
And if we really needed it before then, is there a mechanism for us to hold an emergency meeting and vote on it?
Yes.
Immediately?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do I need to rescind my motion, or what do I do at this point then? Is that a question for Kathy?
No, I think you go ahead and go forward with the motion, seconded and discussion. And if you vote on it, we would bring something back April 7th that would reflect a limitation of this tool to COVID. And if something comes up between now and then, we could call a special meeting or even an emergency meeting at which you could consider taking expedited action.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to continue with the list as I see it. I do not see Councilmember Nixon on the list. I think he is on it, so I'm going to add him on my list. So the next up would be Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. For the question of limiting this to this emergency, I'm a little concerned about having this gap in our code where this particular area is something that our officers are not authorized to enforce today. And I have a question on whether this would meet Councilor Falcone's needs. Could we put an expiration date and give ourselves 2 weeks with the current language? That way we would have something in place if we needed it tomorrow, but also have a chance to revisit over our upcoming council meeting. So I guess that's a question one of the city attorney, if that's possible, and two of Councilmember Falcone, if that meets the intention of your original motion.
Yes, that's possible.
Should I respond? Oh, I didn't know if I had to wait in my queue. yes, I think it would if we have an expiration date. I don't anticipate this emergency ending before 2 weeks, nor another one. We never know if another one's going to happen. But so that would, given the current language, given the narrow focus that Kevin spoke to earlier, and the combination of that and the expiration date, I would be comfortable. But I just feel like the larger change in our code, I'd really like to spend the time to really do research, be thoughtful about making a decision of that magnitude.
Okay, Madam Mayor, I move that we amend the motion to add an expiration date of, let's say, April 30th. That we add an expiration date of April 30th.
Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Councilor Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Council Member Falcone to amend the motion to add an expiration date of April 30th. Discussion. Now I'm gonna pick up back a little bit. Because I've had Councilmember Black on two lists and not called on him. But Councilmember Pascal was before him. So Councilmember Pascal, was there a comment you wanted to make?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So my feelings are, as a local agency, we need to have police powers to enforce matters of public health. Yet, at the same time, we need to be really careful about the authority we grant under emergency powers. So I totally appreciate the comments that Councilmember Curtis and Falcone raised regarding this, is that we just need to be as thoughtful as we can. And I think we are. I think we are being thoughtful, but I really want to look more closely at this and make sure that we're not just giving broad powers based upon emergency proclamations from the federal government. And that we have a choice in the matter in terms of how we enforce things that come down from above. I support both the amendments that Councilmember Falcone and Deputy Mayor Arnold proposed, because I think a month out is fine, just to be sure that we can enforce things that do come up. But I truly believe that our police department is going to be focused on the educational components and is going to be out there talking with folks and educating them. And I fully believe that there aren't going to be things beyond that, that, you know, unless we can avoid them. But at the same time, I just want to be very thoughtful as a legislative body. So I'll support the Second Amendment. Thank you.
Councilmember Black.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I originally raised my hand in connection with the first motion. You know, I probably share Councilmember Pascal's approach to this. I appreciate this discussion. I appreciate that we're being careful and thoughtful. Initially, to be honest, I didn't get overly concerned about the scope of this. I certainly am glad that when we were talking about limiting this to COVID-19 or to a specific time frame, that we're not talking about amending our criminal code. I think amending our criminal code to codify either time or events is probably unwise. The elements that would have to be proven for this misdemeanor are actually quite lengthy. And then, so it'd have to be a knowing violation, as a city attorney mentioned. It would have to be a knowing violation of a lawful order. It'd have to be an order of a public officer that's lawful. It'd have to be related to a declared or proclaimed emergency or disaster, and that emergency or disaster would have to affect this city. So I think there's a lot of protection in there already. So that's one of the reasons I initially was not overly concerned, but I definitely appreciate the concerns that have been raised, and I'm glad we're having a thoughtful discussion about that. I do have one question for the city attorney. City attorney, is there a higher standard? I'm going to use the term mens rea, which is a legal term, but other than knowing, is there a higher level of mens rea that we could consider? Because one of the comments was made by Councilmember Falcone that I really I want to take serious is a employer compelling an employee to be to put themselves in a position to be in violation of misdemeanor. Is there a knowing and willing violation? Is there elsewhere in our code, do we ever impose a higher standard that would allow an employee who's compelled to be at work to not be in violation because it wouldn't be deemed a willing violation?
It's a good question. I'd have to look at that, Councilmember Black. I'm not aware of another situation in our code where we have knowing violation, but or one where we have knowing and willing, but I could look at that. It's a good question, and I take your intent. I wanted to just, before I stop, I wanted to just also mention that in addition to the safeguards that you reiterated, Councilmember Black, if an individual were to be charged with a misdemeanor, it would involve a filing decision by a prosecutor, a probable cause decision by a judge, and it's so there are many safeguards that would in general be in place if before this could play out in a misdemeanor conviction.
So I would say no one's more cautious about government overreacting to an event and putting in place emergency powers that frankly go too far, especially to infringe upon people's civil liberties. But I think I'll echo Council Member Pascal when I say that I do think the state, and in that case, I mean the local, our local municipality, needs to have the police power to enforce a lawful order. But at the same time, I hear from the group that there are a lot of concerns, and I'm open to a more thoughtful and considered approach to this.
Yeah. We will look at knowing and willing. It's a good suggestion.
Thank you. Councilmember Nixon.
Thank you. So procedurally, I think where we are right now is we have a motion to amend from Councilmember Falcone to add an expiration date. That would have been at the end of the emergency. And then we have a motion to amend the amendment from Deputy Mayor Arnold to specifically make that April 30th. And so technically, remarks right now should be limited to the April 30th proposition. But I want to speak a little bit more broadly than that, if I have license to do so, to explain why I support that amendment to the amendment. The end of the original language of this before the substitute, I probably would have voted no because I thought it was too broad to give police this power for something that's simply related to an emergency or disaster, even a declared one. And I think that the language that's currently before us, which is, if I can pull it up here, in direct response to a declared or proclaimed emergency. I think that heads in the right direction, but I think it's still a bit too broad. And what I was looking for in the email comments that I sent to the city attorney and city manager yesterday was something more along the lines of that it had to be an order that was specifically in a proclamation. So not related to, not in response to, but in a violation of an order that was in the proclamation. And they still could be at any level, local, state, or federal. But I think the language is still a little squishy right now. So why do I support the amendment to the amendment and the original amendment? Because I agree with others who have spoken who are saying it needs more work. And by setting an expiration date of April 30th, it gives us two regular meetings to consider refinements to the language before it expires. And God willing, that will be the end of the emergency. It may not be, and we may need to extend it again, but we would have the ability to do that at our April 21st meeting without even having to call a special meeting. But hopefully we would be able to work offline on the language directly with the city attorney and the city manager to get us to something that's more narrowly focused and that will be acceptable to all of us. But I think because of the potential for bad things to happen between now and even next Tuesday, I'm willing to support the ordinance with the April 30th expiration date. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for such a thoughtful discussion. I believe the question is on the amendment to the amended substitute ordinance to add an expiration date of April the 30th. Any further discussion? All those in favor, or
roll call.
Sorry, as moved by Councilmember or Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Falcone. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Black?
Yes.
Councilmember Curtis?
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Sweet?
Yes. The motion carries unanimously. Okay, now the motion is, or the question is on the motion to amend the proposed substitute ordinance 04721 as moved by Council Member Curtis.
Falcone
and seconded by Council Member Pascal. Further discussion, Councilmember Black?
I think Councilmember Pascal is before me.
I don't have anything. Sorry.
Oh, okay. So I just want to be clear, because from the city attorney and the city manager, what I heard a few minutes ago, and I apologize, but what I heard a few minutes ago was that we would, instead of codifying COVID-19 into our criminal code, the city attorney's office and the city manager's office would come back with a similar tool, but structured in a different way so that we're not codifying a specific event into our criminal code. Is that what we're voting on? I just need to be clear before I vote.
So no, sorry. I think that I'll speak that and then the city attorney can jump in. So that was the original concept, and we were recommending you wait till April 7th if you wanted to do that and limit it just to COVID. I believe what you've done now with the amendments is you're going to be adopting this language, but with a sunset of April 30th. And in the time between now and April 30th, we'll be working on a way to address the concerns that have been raised about the broader code element that you're putting in place. So this would actually be code, not the...
And practically speaking, the code revisor is not going to update our code to include this new section with a sunset in 4 weeks.
Right.
And so there will either be something different that is codified or something different that's not codified and is COVID specific to be determined. But you're not going to end up seeing this new section in your code in 2 months. But it technically will be there for the next 4 weeks.
Any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Black?
Yes.
Councilmember Curtis?
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Sweet?
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Item number five, substitute ordinance 047.
Point of order.
Go ahead, Toby.
Yeah, we need to vote on the ordinance as amended. We adopted the amendment, but now we have to vote on the ordinance as amended.
Okay, because nobody ever moved that.
Right.
I thought some. Oh, no. Really?
Really?
That's an interesting point.
So I tried to do it by way of calling Amy's motion to amend the proposed substitute ordinance. That didn't work, huh?
Well, procedurally, I think that we could go ahead and move the adoption of the ordinance as amended by the previous motions.
Let's do that. Substitute ordinance as amended.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I did. But we'll do it again. So, question is on the motion to move the substitute ordinance 04721 as amended. Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Go ahead. So I think we do need to have a motion on the floor to do this. And so I would like to move the amended motion.
And Councilmember Falcone.
Oh, second.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Falcone to move the amended ordinance.
Discussion. Ordinance.
Yeah.
Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I really do appreciate the discussion on this as we work through this. I think the issues brought up are important, and I'm glad that we have come to this compromise that will have authority in place if we need it before our next meeting, but give us time to get things right, both for this emergency and potentially for future emergencies. So I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Question is on the motion to approve the amended ordinance 4721. Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Black?
Yes.
Councilmember Curtis?
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Sweet?
Yes. Carries unanimously. We go on to number five now.
I just want to say, nice job. That was complicated because not only was it an important issue, but you had an amendment to an amendment to an ordinance that was a substitute ordinance. So I think you got through it very well.
You're good. Thank you. Good job, gang.
Phew.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we now move to item number five, substitute ordinance 04722. Relating to authorization to the Director of Finance and Administration on a temporary basis and in the appropriate extenuating circumstances to temporarily defer and suspend the collection of all utility charges and taxes within titles 5 and 7 of the Kirkland Municipal Code and to waive any late fees, penalties, or interest that would otherwise accrue as a result of such late payments and declaring an emergency. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we do have another substitute for this as well, and I'm going to have the city attorney walk you through the change, which we think is an important one. Before I do that, I do want to highlight that we did look into the issue of whether or not we could also defer the business license fee payments. And so in talking with the city attorney and the finance director, because those are collected from the state, we can't do that ourselves, but we can allow the state to do it if someone asks. So the state has to agree to do it as well. We can't, however, suspend our late fees, which we have already put in place. So I just wanted to say that's why that is not now included in this a particular ordinance is because we've got our collection going through the state.
Just to add on to that, the finance director told me that the state of Washington has contacted the city and asked if we would be willing to defer a business license application payments during the pendency of the emergency, and we've said we would. So it sounds like the state's going to do that.
So with that, City Attorney, if you can explain the change in the red line draft.
Yeah, the only change is to remove direction from you to the Director of Finance and how to exercise his discretion to determine that there are extenuating circumstances that would make a suspension or a deferral of utility charges or taxes appropriate. As we first drafted it, our thought was that you would want to direct that this happen in every instance. And then in conversation with individual council members, the point was made that we're going to send bills out and that there will be people in the community that are in a position to pay those bills, and they should be able to do it. If there are concerns, they will be raised with the Director of Finance, and he will then exercise his discretion to determine that there are extenuating circumstances that allow for a suspension or a deferral. And just to add on to that, talking with the department, they're going to make that option very clear in their written communications to customers.
And just to further elaborate, we did talk about what we thought was there a potential administrative impact of this, and finance director feels that it's very easily handled in their current with their current utility staff and their current process. So it literally just takes on saying, I need a deferral because I have hardship. And so they don't anticipate this discretion factor being an impact to them at all in their ability to get this done. But it does allow for people who don't need one to go ahead and pay.
The waiver of late fees, penalties, and interest would be mandatory.
Councilmember Nixon.
Thanks. Yeah, I specifically had a question about that. And when I first read it, I wondered if we should potentially have people have to show that they had a need to defer because I didn't want to set up a situation where people who were completely able to pay would be taking the deferral and maybe digging themselves into a hole that they didn't need to be in. And but I understand that it's one thing for the department to be able to kind of ask people to maybe verbally affirm that they have a need. It would be quite another thing to do some kind of means test and have people have to prove they had a need. And I don't think the city wants to get into looking at bank statements or balance sheets or anything else for people to prove they have a need. So my understanding of this, and I just want to confirm this with the city manager and city attorney, is we're basically going to give the deferral to anybody who asks for it, and they don't have to prove anything, but we will be encouraging people who have the ability to pay to go ahead and do so. Is that your interpretation of it?
That is correct.
Yes.
And it also doesn't abate the payment. It just defers the payment. So.
Right. But without any interest or penalties late fees or anything.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Can I get a motion? Motion to approve substitute ordinance 4722.
So moved.
Second.
The move by Councilmember Curtis, seconded by Councilmember Falcone. Any further discussion? Question is on the motion to approve substitute ordinance 04722. Clerk, please call the roll.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Black?
Yes.
Councilmember Curtis?
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Sweet?
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. This takes us to item number 6, Human Services Stabilization Fund and Resolution R5414, approving a Human Services Stabilization Initiative and its fiscal note. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is one that doesn't actually have a red line update, so I'll do both the speaking. I would like to point out we have our Human Services Administrator, Leslie Miller, is here if we have questions. She's been gracious enough to stay and watch this. But what the resolution does is really three things. The first and probably the most important is it authorizes approval of a fiscal note, which allocates $265,000 of reserves over projections, sales tax over projections from 2019 to be given to the list of human services agencies, which are included in the packet as Exhibit B. And those were focused on the main categories of homelessness, so shelters that are providing services to those experiencing homelessness, to entities that are providing direct assistance for food and rental assistance, like HopeLink, and then for behavioral and domestic violence assistance, so folks who are experiencing those things. So that's the first and probably the largest piece of this. Secondly, included in the resolution is also the policy direction that we will be willing to advance 2020 monies to any human services agency we contract with at their request. So again, as Leslie was speaking with agencies, not all agencies are interested in getting all their money now, which is great, and some might want just part of it. And so it's really going to be more of a case-by-case basis, but it gives us the opportunity, if they need it, as a cash flow issue to get through it. And then the last piece of this resolution is it also eliminates the Kirkland service requirement as a condition of getting the money. And so as you probably saw in the memo, and again, Leslie can speak to this more if you have a question, we expect every human service agency is going to exceed their minimum services, because the problem we have right now, obviously, is that cases are growing, but that by eliminating that Kirkland requirement, it does make it easier for us to provide money, and we will also still be tracking the information. So at the end of the year, even though this is a emergency year, it's not that we're not going to watch that, it's just that we're not going to require it as a service target, as an element of getting the money. So that's a quick overview. Happy to answer questions, and Leslie Miller is also here to answer any questions.
Councilmember Falcone.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to move that we adopt resolution R5414.
Second.
The move by Councilmember Falcone, seconded by Councilmember Curtis.
Point of order.
Councilmember Black?
I think it's resolution 5415, not 14.
Sorry, I wrote down in my notes incorrectly. Move to adopt resolution R5415.
Second.
Actually, that was a small glitch on the agenda, so that my apologies for that.
Oh, thank you. I'm confused. Okay, so it has been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Councilmember Nixon.
Thank you. I just wanted to take the opportunity to not complain about anything. But to say I really appreciate the diligent work that the staff and those of you who have been involved in this have put into it. These are important needs. I think that the agencies that have been selected to receive this additional support are all great choices. And I support the level of additional revenue going to each of them so that they can provide these services to people in our community. Wish we could do more. Right now, I think it's important to note to the community that the money that we're using for this is excess sales tax revenue that came in from last year that was not previously budgeted to some other purpose. And yes, we could reallocate funds from other budget categories to do more, but this is something that we can do immediately without reducing any other services, and I fully support that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Question is on the motion to move resolution R5415.
Madam Mayor, we have discussion from Councilmember Falcone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Councilmember Falcone.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to echo Councilmember Nixon's comments of thanking the city staff. We've been working really hard. You know, Leslie Miller works very hard, even before this current emergency, on working and partnering with our neighboring cities, partnering with human service providers in our community. You know, before this emergency, we had a homelessness crisis and affordable housing crisis, and that's just being exacerbated by this current emergency. And so I'm really proud of the work that the City of Kirkland does to prioritize human services and the work of the Human Services Commission and Council last year in just giving unprecedented funding to human services in our community. And I want to thank the human service providers who are on the ground doing this work. I also wish that we could do more, but I'm really thankful for the work that they are doing day in and day out to make sure that everyone's basic needs are met in our community. So I wholeheartedly support this, and I'm thrilled that our city is prioritizing the needs of our most vulnerable during this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the set of work that we're doing tonight represents a full spectrum of help for the community in an emergency, making sure that we're supporting our small businesses, making sure we're doing all the things that we could do in the city for the charges that we have around utilities, providing supplemental funding for human services, and making it clear for the role in law enforcement in educating and enforcing directives that we need to do as a community to be successful to get through COVID-19. So I think we're hitting all bases with this today, and I'm glad that we could do this with a special meeting this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? Question is on the motion to move resolution R5415, approving a Human Services Stabilization Initiative and its fiscal note. Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Black?
Yes.
Councilmember Curtis?
Yes.
Councilmember Falcone?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Sweet?
Yes. Resolution R5415 is approved. Takes us to item number 7, the COVID-19 update. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this will be very brief. Thank you, City Attorney, for your great work today. No dramatic new information from the EOC. So I just wanted to highlight two things that are going to be happening with respect to the April 7th council meeting. And this is after discussions with the mayor and deputy mayor at our agenda setting meeting today. And you should both feel free to chime in as well. So one thing we decided to do is that in all future council meetings, we'll have a COVID update as a standing item on the council agenda, so that similar to a city manager report, but at the beginning of the meeting, so we can talk to the council and the public about anything that has happened since the last meeting. And then the second thing we discussed was the work we've done to try to comply with the governor's directive to make sure every item on the agenda is necessary and routine. So this was something we worked carefully, the city clerk, the city attorney, and I, and then speaking with the mayor and the deputy mayor. Our framework is really to try to focus on things that are budget related, public safety related, we've always done them, or are necessary for the COVID-19 update. So you'll see a very slimmed down April 7th council meeting. The category that is most impacted by these rulings, we think, from the governor and the attorney general are basically things related to planning. And so the code impacts of this, the code change impacts of this in the planning work program are going to be severely impacted. So what you're going to see on the council packet and the council calendar is we're creating a new category we're just calling pending, and we're going to sort of wait and see whether further clarifications come on how to deal with zoning code changes, and we're sort of stacking up things that we think don't meet that necessary and routine standard at this time. And so as we figure out ways that they might, we'll start to put them back into future council agendas. But right now, they're just sort of beginning to stack up. And again, they tend to be, right now, it looks like primarily planning level efforts. But you will see one on the council meeting for April 7th, and that is finishing off the shoreline management plan update related to including the boathouse issue. And the reason for that, we concluded in two ways. One was that the issue is necessary because we've already passed the deadline that was given to us by Ecology, so we've actually missed a state deadline for adoption. And secondly, that all of the public outreach on that topic was done before COVID-19 happened. And so we feel like it does meet the test. But we just wanted you to know that we're working through all those issues on a sort of agenda by agenda basis. And so those are some of the changes that you'll see based on COVID-19. So happy to answer any questions. And that's the only update I have.
Mayor, you're muted.
Okay, anything else for the good of the order or anybody else? Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to report on Friday, the legislative work group met to review the federal legislation, the CARES Act, and while it only provided direct funding for cities of 500,000 or more, there were a number of categories that we discussed that the city may be eligible for grant funding to pursue. We reviewed the AWC, the Association of Washington Cities, set of asks of the governor on executive orders and potential flexibility there, and brainstormed on some things we might pursue for revenue flexibility and authority flexibility in the legislative agenda if a special session should occur. If you have any feedback or additions on things that we should be pursuing, please let me, the mayor, or Councilmember Curtis know. Thank you.
And if I may, thank you, Deputy Marino, for bringing that up. I can't believe I forgot that topic. So the directors have all been asked to read through the CARES Act with respect to how it might impact each individual department, both opportunities and challenges. And that work is due to me end of the business day on Thursday, so that at the next legislative work group that we have on Friday, we'll have kind of our assessment of even more opportunities and things that we might be looking at for the state. So we're sort of re-engaging our legislative work group mechanisms to try to provide you all with advice and action items. So,
great. Anything else from anybody? Well, congratulations. Thank you, Kurt and Kevin and Leslie and everybody for letting us have our second ever official. Well, this is our first special meeting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So thanks, everybody. And we are adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night. Good night.